Our third case, 20-2106, United States versus Fernandez. And Ms. Lujan, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Esperanza Lujan, and I represent appellant Jesus Fernandez. We've raised several issues in our brief, three issues specifically, but I'd like to discuss this morning the issue of the suppression issue. Agent Perry's initial handling of Mr. Fernandez's carry-on bag on the Greyhound bus when it was in an overhead compartment constituted a search, as the court found in Nicholson. In Nicholson, this court found that a search occurred where the agent engaged in a tactile examination of a carry-on bag that was in an overhead compartment, and when that examination was done specifically with the purpose of finding something of independent evidentiary value in that bag. That same type of physical intrusion happened here in Mr. Fernandez's case. And there are six things that Agent Perry did when taken together and when viewed in context show that his handling of the bag was a search. First, Agent Perry boarded an unattended and unsupervised bus completely out of view of any other passengers or employees, as was done in Nicholson. The bags were looked at and examined by Agent Perry without permission from the owners, and the owners had also not been given advance notice before getting off of the bus during the layover that their bags would be subject to any kind of examination by a DEA agent. Also, Agent Perry, when he approached the bag, he pulled down the retaining cord, he lifted the bag, and he held it for 30 seconds. 30 seconds is a very long time. If you were on a bus and you saw someone else holding your bag for 30 seconds as Agent Perry did, that would cause some concern. Agent Perry also, in those 30 seconds while he was holding the bag, he testified that he observed all sides of the bag. He also testified at the suppression hearing that his purpose was to determine the heaviness of the bag.
In that 30 seconds, he also handed it to the other agent, didn't he? Or was that passed beyond the 30 seconds? He had his other agent, who apparently was new or a newbie, had him also feel to see if he, you know, what he thought the weight was. They both did that.
That's correct. Agent Perry's testimony was that he specifically himself held it for 30 seconds. He then, after those 30 seconds, handed it to a fellow agent, and that fellow agent, Agent Lemon, described it as a teachable moment, that Agent Perry was taking the opportunity to explain to him what can or cannot be done when handling bags, and also telling him how to observe the bag. Agent Lemon testified that in his handling of the bag, he observed that the bottom of the bag was sagging, indicating that something very heavy was inside of that bag.
We do have some competing precedent here, and maybe it's a bit of a close call on the line drawing, but we have our Galt case, which seems to ratify, you know, lifting a bag. And what makes this case closer to Nicholson rather than to Galt? And, you know, as I read Nicholson, there clearly was some manipulation of the bags to determine the contents, but why should we tilt towards Nicholson or versus tilting towards Galt?
I think this case is more like Nicholson for two main reasons. In Nicholson, the agent there testified that he manipulated the bag. The court unpacked that word manipulate and looked at Webster's dictionary of what does manipulate mean. And manipulate, the court said in Nicholson, means to treat, to work, or operate with the hands. I think here that Agent Perry's handling of this bag, observing it for 30 seconds, handing it to another agent for a teachable moment, that falls within that definition of operating with the hands, and therefore would also be a manipulation in terms of a legal conclusion. I think also this case is also like Nicholson, because in Nicholson, the court reasoned that part of what was important there was that in Nicholson, the court was working that bag, the carry-on bag, with the purpose of looking for evidence. And we know from Agent Perry's testimony here that was also his purpose.
Well, it's got to be an objective test, and, you know, looking at whether there, you know, a bus passenger has a reasonable expectation of privacy in a, you know, piece of luggage that's in the overhead rack. And isn't there some expectation that either bus personnel or other passengers might move bags, lift bags, rearrange bags? And doesn't that indicate a diminished expectation of privacy in this particular case?
Going back to
that's kind of where, you know, some of the other cases, there's a Seventh Circuit case that goes along those lines, our Galt case, et cetera. So
what I would say about Galt, and I'll come back to Nicholson, in Galt, I think that context in all of these cases and the circumstances for each case are important. In Galt, there was a gym bag that was protruding half a foot into the aisle of the bus. And so the court reasoned there, look, it's protruding into the aisle. It's much more reasonable that another passenger might accidentally kick or lift the bag in the way that the agent did in Galt, because they might need to get through the aisle or to get to the window seat. So because of the specific placement in Galt, the court there said, you know, it's reasonable that another passenger might have, you know, kicked or lifted the bag in the same way. But here in Mr. Fernandez's case, it's much more like Nicholson. In Nicholson, you know, the lower court said the same thing. There's no reasonable expectation of privacy in this situation, because you might expect that a fellow passenger might just push or move a bag, maybe even momentarily lift it. But in Nicholson, the agent far exceeded what a fellow passenger would normally do. And that's the same here. You know, if you're on a bus, like I mentioned earlier, it's not necessarily expected that a fellow passenger is going to pull your bag down, hold it for 30 seconds, observe it from all sides, try to determine something about the nature of its contents, and hand it to someone else to do the same thing.
Yeah, they're not directly analogous, but that happens all the time on, you know, airplane luggage racks. And I haven't been on a bus trip since the pandemic started, but you might think the driver or an attendant in the bus would move bags around, and the passengers would ordinarily expect that might happen.
You know, I think that mere casual contact to move something momentarily to make room for your own bag might fit that situation. But here again, Agent Perry's purpose far exceeded that. He wasn't just moving the bag or just sort of looking for a name tag.
When you say his purpose, the reason it took longer, I think this is undisputed, is he wanted to show to the new agent what you can do. Maybe he also said what you cannot do. But isn't the question here what he did in terms of examining the bag, and everything he did that would infringe on the expectation of privacy of the defendant or whoever owned the bag was just weigh it and observe it from every angle. He didn't manipulate the bag, did he? He didn't feel to see what that material that was protruding felt like, to see if it sounded, you know, felt like a can of shaving cream rather than a collection of illicit drugs that are packaged in a particular way. So don't you have to describe what the agent did in manipulating the bag to determine whether it was what you would not have a reasonable expectation of privacy for, because other passengers or the bus driver might move it, might handle it in the same way?
I think that's part of the inquiry, but it's also to consider, as Nicholson pointed out, what is it that the agent is moving the bag for? Why is he handling it in this manner? And going
okay. So here, your biggest complaint is he handled it for 30 seconds, but he was doing it to show the new agent what you can do. It wasn't to discover in that 30 seconds, there's nothing to indicate he discovered more information than he could have discovered in 5 seconds, is there?
I believe that there is. The 30 seconds Agent Perry testified was just his own handling of the bag. and he was observing it on all sides and testing its heaviness. This is not something that you would necessarily do in just 5 seconds, to observe all sides to figure out, well, how full is this? Agent Perry determined that it wasn't filled to capacity, that it wasn't fully filled to capacity with clothes. So he was handling the bag in a way that allowed him to get at the nature of the contents of the bag. And Nicholson basically said that's what is prohibited, that, you know, when it reveals something more than just the presence of drugs, to an extent that it reveals the possible contents of a bag, it can constitute a search.
Was this the only bag that was examined by the by Perry, or were other pieces of luggage handled?
Agent Perry testified that it's his normal practice to look at the placement of all bags. On this particular date, he was asked by the court, how many bags did you examine before this bag or after this bag? And his answer was that he could not remember. Coming back to the word manipulate, Agent Perry used that word in the suppression hearing and said, I did not manipulate this bag. But again, looking at the definition that the court looked at of the word manipulate in Nicholson, manipulate can cover things such as to treat, to work, or operate with the hands. Agent Perry operated Mr. Fernandez's bag with his hands. And by doing so, he was looking for specific evidence. He was an expert examiner, as in Nicholson. And that constituted...
Does it matter, you know, kind of turning to the abandonment theory, you know, depending on how we come out on that, but... the district court determined that the bag had been abandoned, and if that were the case, does it matter that there was this previous manipulation or handling of the bag if the defendant disclaimed ownership and possession of it?
Yes, if there's a Fourth Amendment violation that precedes the abandonment, then the abandonment cannot be voluntary as a matter of law. I see that I'm running out of time. I'd like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
All right, you may. Welcome back, Mr. Caney. You're up.
Good morning, Your Honors. Again, Emil Caney for the United States. Talking about Nicholson, Nicholson doesn't support the defendant's case here. Nicholson, although we've heard about the definition of manipulation in Nicholson, it can't mean that that doesn't have the significance that Ms. Lujan thinks it does, because Nicholson, if you look later in the opinion, it cites Galt, and it approves as the sort of handling of a bag that is okay under the Fourth Amendment. So Nicholson could not have meant to disapprove the sort of a search, or the sort of handling, rather, of a bag that the agent engaged in Galt. With respect to...
Well, it is a little different. I mean, he did handle it for, you know, 30 seconds, which seems like a long time for just moving around luggage. And it was in a more private location. I know it's on a luggage rack, but that's a little different than being, you know, sticking out into an aisle. I think people recognize there's a little bit of a distinction there. Why aren't those sufficient facts to push this closer to Nicholson?
Well, Nicholson involved the agent pressed the bag with his hands and was physically intrusive with it. He actually felt what was in the bag with his hands. And here we don't have any facts like that. Yes, here the bag was not sticking out into the aisle, but Galt also said that the fact that the defendant there left the bag unattended on the train was sufficient to hold that there was no reasonable expectation of privacy in it. With respect to the 30 seconds, Agent Perry testified the reason he did that was to show the other agent, to teach him about what he couldn't do and what he could and could not do. There's no evidence about whether he learned more in that 30 seconds than he would have in 5 seconds. Now, the reason for that is because I think that's one of the problems with this issue entirely is the defense never raised it below, so we didn't present this kind of evidence.
Didn't he also sniff the bag?
He said he might have. He didn't remember. He said he might have. So it's possible he did.
The Bond case you haven't discussed, but isn't that the Supreme Court case where we have a bag on a bus and it's in the upper compartment and they pull it out and they actually, I don't think they use the words manipulate, but they squeezed it, which the court found was essentially exploratory. And I wonder if that isn't this closer to that, in the sense that obviously the holding it, the weighing it, the examining it, handing it to the next officer to do the same thing. Isn't that really an exploratory type of action, as opposed to the Galt case where you've got a bag that's out in the halfway out in the aisle and anybody could come along and push it, pick it up, put it back, you know, push it, kick it, whatever they're going to do. But that's different than an exploratory type of action, which is clearly what was going on here.
Well, in Galt, there was also exploratory action. The officer picked up the bag to see what its weight was. With respect to your question about Bond also says in that opinion that that passengers expect that employees or other passengers will handle their bags and pick them up. And so it draws, I think what Nicholson and Bond do is they draw a distinction. You know, passengers and employees are going to handle your bag.
My point was, though, that I think Bond found that squeezing was what he did have, that the defendant did have a subjectively and objectively reasonable expectation of privacy in that circumstance. And I'm saying, why can't we extend that to this case where, you know, we don't have a bag that's on the floor or sticking out, or, you know, we're not talking about kicking or pushing or shoving or moving. We're talking about picking it up, weighing it, handing it to someone else. Why don't we have that same? Why wouldn't we have the same result as in Bond?
Well, because the line that Nicholson and Bond draw is with a physical intrusion into the bag itself, either by sticking your hands on its sides, pressing it, trying to feel what's inside.
Did Bond actually draw that line, or is that just what the circumstances were in that case, which is a little bit different?
Well, Bond says, early before the court's holding, Bond says that other passengers handling the bags, there's a reasonable expectation on a passenger's part that other employees or passengers will handle the bag.
Right. Handling is different, though. I'm talking about, you know, sure, you would expect perhaps somebody might pick up your bag to get to their bag, or a bus employee might pick up your bag to get to their bag, or have to move your bag, or kick your bag to get it out of the way. But would you reasonably expect that someone would pick up your bag, take it out of the, you know, upper compartment, look at it, examine it carefully, weigh it for 30 seconds, hand it to another officer, ask that officer to weigh it and look at it and observe it? Isn't that different? Isn't that more exploratory? And isn't that beyond what, you know, would be you could expect?
Your Honor, that's just not the line that Bond drew. The line that Bond drew was that a physical intrusion into the bag is a Fourth Amendment search. It did not say that merely lifting the bag, even for 30 seconds, to see what the weight was, would be a search. And this court has said that's not a search. You know, if they want to raise it on certiorari with the Supreme Court, I guess they could do that. But that's just not the current state of the law. And I think also, with going back to the 30 seconds, I think it would be perverse to say that an agent's effort to educate another agent on what violates the Fourth Amendment and what does not, so that that agent will not violate the Fourth Amendment, is itself a Fourth Amendment violation. I don't think there's any authority that draws a line around the amount of time. I mean, Well, there's authority if you get to the your seizure cases, there might be, if there's a material interference with the passenger's interest in the bag. But they're not raising a seizure claim, at least not with regard to his lifting of the bag, and this court has already rejected that sort of seizure claim in United States versus Hall from 1992, which we cited in the brief.
So let me pursue something that the Chief Judge asked about earlier.
Okay.
If the bag was abandoned, and that's why the later search was okay, what difference does it make if there was an improper intrusion earlier? There could be a Fourth Amendment civil claim, but is there any fruit of that handling of the bag that you can say was the abandonment in any way the fruit of the earlier handling of the bag? It's not apparent to me, but why are we even considering this handling of the bag?
Well, Your Honor, the answer, I think the government would have made exactly that argument if this theory that merely lifting the bag and weighing it was a Fourth Amendment violation had been presented in the district court. But because it was not, there was no evidence developed on those points. But I don't see on this record, I don't see any indication that the abandonment was somehow affected by the earlier lifting of the bag. I don't know if that's getting to what you're asking me.
But... That was my question. I suspect Ms. Lujan will have a response to that. She has some time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Maybe so. And I think I would like to address what she said in her reply, since I haven't had a chance, about the waiver aspect of this, is that she has mentioned, and correctly, that a bond claim was mentioned at the suppression hearing, and that the defense later filed on different grounds a motion to reconsider to resurrect their bond claim. But bond held that it's the physical manipulation of the bag that constitutes a search. There was no argument anywhere that merely lifting the bag and holding it and seeing what it weighed was that was a Fourth Amendment search, because that goes beyond what bond held, and that was never presented. So
the defendant did raise an issue based on bond, but you're saying the defense at that point was arguing that the officers manipulated the bag beyond lifting it and examining the exterior. And on that point, the district judge ruled against defendant, saying there's no evidence of manipulation.
To be more precise, Your Honor, at the hearing, a defense counsel suggested there was a potential bond issue. And I think that's the phrase he used. But he also said, you know, that the agents testified they did not physically manipulate the bag. And then when the district court asked, okay, so where are you saying that Agent Perry crossed the line? He pointed to the later stage of the case when the passengers had already reboarded, and he picked up the bag after what we consider to be the abandonment. So they didn't explicitly move even on bond at the hearing or before the hearing. But after the hearing, there was a motion to reconsider filed, which Ms. Lujan cites, in which what the defense argued was that notes taken by an AUSA from a prior case showed that the notes referred to a pre-search that Agent Perry had not conducted. He was not able to conduct it because the defendant in that case took her bag off the bus. And they said, well, we don't know what a pre-search is, and we need to explore this further to see if there was a bond violation. And the district court denied that. But my point is, this claim in addition to bond that seeks to expand bond beyond its bounds was never raised. There was never any claim about lifting the bag was a search. That's the only point that I'm trying to make on waiver. With respect to the abandonment issue, we think the bag was abandoned. When Agent Perry asked about if you have any luggage on the bus, the defendant said, "I don't got nothing with me." And so the issue here is not just what Fernandez might have understood luggage to mean, but his unequivocal statement that he had nothing with him on the bus. And the issue, the question this court will be looking at is whether an officer in Agent Perry's position would have objectively understood that unequivocal denial of having anything on the bus to mean that he was abandoning anything on the bus. And we think it did. Unless there's any more questions, I would yield the remainder of my time and ask that the court affirm.
Let me ask a little bit about the agency issue. Sure. There was a question about whether the person somehow the agents had, I'm sorry, the law enforcement officers had an agent at the bus terminal who could handle, who would handle the filming, the recording of events at their direction. And did the court limit that inquiry in any way other than to say we're not going to ask if someone, whether the agents had any informants at the terminal?
Your Honor, to answer the first part of your question, there was no evidence that the agents had anything to do with filming security cameras at the Greyhound terminal. No evidence that they provided the cameras, provided training, had Pardon?
So was there any restriction on the defendant's inquiry into that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Did the judge preclude any? Well, I thought that it was arguing that there was a restriction because they couldn't ask about informants.
Is what Agent Perry testified is he has an informant who provides him with bus passenger manifests. And we don't know who the informant is or where the informant is or whether the person's even a Greyhound employee. But he may be, he or she. And so the district court, I'm out of time, but may
please, I no, please, answer? Please response.
Okay. So what the district court said is we have all this testimony from the Greyhound employees that and from the DEA agents that they had nothing to do with anything concerning the security camera footage. And the Greyhound terminal manager in charge of producing the footage gave a comprehensive explanation of why that footage was not produced. And what the district court said is, I don't see how testimony about an informant who provides passenger manifests and not an activity that has also nothing to do with the security camera footage is going to shed any light on whether the DEA had control over the security cameras.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We have some rebuttal.
Thank you. I'd like to just push back a little bit on the government's interpretation, I think, of Bond. I think that Bond, as Judge Morris suggested, our case could fit also into Bond. In Bond, there was an agent that he testified that he squeezed the carry-on in the overhead compartment where it was. He didn't bring it down. He just merely squeezed it. That was his testimony. And there the court found that, you know, a passenger might expect that their fellow passenger might merely move it. But what the agent did in Bond went beyond, you know, just a mere pushing or a visual inspection, that it was physically intrusive because as a matter of course, he was filling the bag in an exploratory manner. And that's what you just wouldn't reasonably expect other passengers to do. And I think we have the same thing here. Agent Perry's handling of Mr. Fernandez's bag was a physical intrusion that as a matter of course is not how you would reasonably think other passengers would handle the bag.
Let me ask, not so much what Bond, what you now say Bond says, But what was argued at the suppression hearing? Apparently, there was nothing raised about handling of the bag in your motion to suppress. That in itself may be a waiver, but there was some discussion at the suppression hearing, so I'd like to examine that. Was there any argument at the suppression hearing that the handling of the bag was unlawful in any way other than manipulating the contents to try to feel what the contents would be? Was there any argument made that the length of time that the bag was held or the fact that the entire exterior was examined was unlawful? Was that argument made at the suppression hearing?
At the suppression hearing, the defense counsel the court was asking about the handling of the bag, and defense counsel answered, "What does handle mean? The testimony would suggest that all the agent did was lift and feel its heft. However, he carried it with two hands, using it with both hands provides an opportunity to kind of feel what's in there." So there was arguments made by defense counsel at the suppression hearing, and that's why the court in its memorandum and an opinion
I'm sorry. You're asking the district court to draw a lot of inferences about what was arguing, so I don't want you to run past that. What you read sounded like, if I were the district judge, I think I would have understood it as, but correct me if I'm wrong, as saying, well, it kind of sounded like all they did was lift it and look at the outside, but they had the opportunity to manipulate. And the attorney was essentially saying, to the extent that they were manipulating it, it was improper. Did they ever come out and say that just the time involved and the examination of the exterior would violate the defendant's Fourth Amendment rights?
No, and we're not saying that it's just the length of time that matters here. I think in context, the defense, as we're doing today, was putting out there that the agents actually physically examined the bag in an exploratory manner, and that was indicative of a bond violation. And the district court then took that argument and ruled specifically on the issue in its memorandum and opinion.
Did you have a follow-up, Judge Hartz?
No.
I know you're over your time, but I just wanted to finish up on the abandonment issue. And what's the best case that supports your position that an illegal search vitiates subsequent abandonment?
I would ask the court to look at the context and the specifics in Hernandez, Denny, and Burbage. There was abandonment that was found, but it was only found after the agent asked a question about that specific bag. For example, Hernandez, they asked, "Is this backpack above you yours?" And Denny, they asked, "Hey, is that plastic bag underneath your seat in the sleeper of your train, is that yours?" In Burbage, "Is this backpack, you know, above you yours?" There's no such specific question that was posed to Mr. Fernandez here.
Okay, thank you, counsel. We appreciate your arguments. You are excused, and the case shall be submitted.